Going to be a great show today. I'm going to have my good buddy, Sabi Adas. He's one of the partners over at Moneta Ventures. And we're going to be discussing a little bit about younger people becoming entrepreneurs. And I think it's fair to say, and we'll talk about it a little bit on the show today, that not everybody is cut out to be an entrepreneur. And not everybody needs to take the same path to entrepreneurship. And really, I don't think everybody needs to take the same path to being successful in their lives. So stick around. I think you're going to like today's show with Sabi Adas. So you want to be an entrepreneur. You are in college, maybe even in high school, and you've got this dream about changing the world, making some real do-re-mi. So do you drop out of college to chase this dream? I mean, it's risky. Well, we're going to be talking about that and entrepreneurship generally, and also venture capital. Generally speaking, I am here with Sabi Adas. He is one of the partners over at Moneta Ventures. Moneta Ventures is the most respected, arguably the most respected venture capital company in the region. How are you doing today, Sabia?
Doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me and for those kind words about Moneta.
You bet. Well, I mean, and I have kind words about you as well. You may be one of the smartest, maybe the smartest venture capital guy in the region as well. You're helping us model out financial projections on some stuff we're working on. I know you're technically very savvy, but you also have a perspective about young people who are in college and whether or not they should drop out of college to become the next Steve Jobs or they should stay the course like mom and dad told them to. Thoughts?
A lot of thoughts on that. And this is ironic because it comes after the fact that I just funded this two Stanford and Toronto dropouts that started a company, got to nine figures before they were, you know, legally able to enter a bar. And
wow.
We just invested in them. And so it might be contrary to that, but have had some strong opinions on this, I think primarily based on my own experience. I went to school in the Bay, at UC Berkeley, always surrounded by people that are into entrepreneurship, wanted to start their first, you know, viral app, their first year of college. Many of them dropped out. They had their first exit before I graduated.
Wow. And so how are you feeling? You're sitting there at Berkeley. Did you go to, you went to business school there or just undergrad?
So I had a whole 180. I went in pre-med and came out computer science at the other end.
Oh, okay.
Didn't do finance until I graduated.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're going through college, still trying to decide what you're going to be when you grow up, and you're seeing real success stories happening right before your very eyes. And so what's the emotion when that happens? Is that like...
I've always been a high-achieving kind of guy, and a lot of high-achieving people have their self-worth tied to the relative self-worth of the peers around them, which I think is problematic, but at Berkeley it was very evident, and so it was intimidating. It was a bit disheartening because I've always wanted to be ahead of the curve in some senses, and many of my peers as well. And so 4 years in college, finding my way through my majors and realizing I didn't start an app when I was graduating. It's a weird feeling, and it's odd to feel disheartened by that. And in hindsight, it was just very short-sighted, and it was just the world that I was in. But what I learned looking back, it's a very, very small percentage of people that do it, that succeed, and don't have the need to go back to school to be able to succeed. And the way I see it, you know, I went to Berkeley, which has produced a lot of great entrepreneurs, great founders, and there's a dichotomy. The people that went there, they had the resources, the network, the sophistication to be able to jump into a startup. They knew people that could fund them. They had advisors on their board where they didn't need business experience to launch a company. It was just location, location, location for them. That's not necessarily the case across the board. And so the idea of jumping in and starting your own business without prior business experience is alluring, and you work for yourself early on. You don't have to go through the grind. In my view, the first 2 to 4 years of your first job out of college teach you more than the last 6 years of whatever you've done. You really don't know how a company operates. You don't know how to be a part of a team building a product. And that learning, I think, doubles or triples your chance to be able to start a business as a young founder. And now looking back, I staunchly believe that. And that might be a contrarian point of view.
Yeah, you just invested into this company that's thriving.
Yeah.
And these, how old are these people you invested into?
Now they're 22 and 23.
Incredible. So they started a few years back.
18 and 19.
So here's one example of something you did that they're the very elite.
The exception to the rule.
The exception.
I think.
Yeah.
I've had talks with them, and you know the founder, his name is Swish. Just a really all-star guy.
If my name was Swish, I would probably drop out of college. college too.
Swish and Onik, and you know, went to great schools, great networks, but were able to surround themselves with advisors early on, with mentors that are in the venture and startup community, and lean on their advice, their network, to kind of artificially accelerate their own experience, get that credibility and exposure. Most people don't have that. I think it's a form of privilege to be able to access those networks, and it's not commonly had, and primarily, unless you're in the Bay Area or in a major tech hub, you don't have access to that. But if you do, maybe that gets you forward. But I think they are the exception to the rule.
Okay. So thinking about that, yeah, I think there are, there's a lot of people that probably are listening to this going, I get it. We're talking about the rocket ship type of companies, right? Let's differentiate between normal small business, you know, the brick and mortar, and the companies that might launch themselves into the stratosphere, like an Apple or something like that, a tech company that's really going to grow fast. So you're going to college, and you know, some people are thinking, maybe I want to open up a small business. That's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about quitting, starting a tech company, getting venture capital, and taking it to the moon. How many people really want to do that? How many people really are content? Because I mean, I know plenty of people that drop out of college just because, you know, they don't really know where it's taking them. And I wonder to myself, how many people are thinking, I just am kind of bored with college, and so why not be a startup? And how many are so ambitious that they really want to take that risk and seize that potential opportunity?
Definitely. And I think, at least where I went to school, it was a bubble that might not be representative of the entire population. Just people that have seen that their whole lives, idealize the tech founders and startups, illuminaries of our generation, and want to follow in their footsteps.
Were you one of those at that time?
I was, as soon as I realized that medicine was not for me.
Oh, okay. So there was that. So you had this dream of being what, a doctor?
Being a doctor.
And then when was that moment when you, see, I had that kind of same moment. I was going to be a pro football player.
Yeah.
And you know, only one thing stopping me. Athleticism. And I realized that probably somewhere in high school. So, you know, when you sort of give up on that dream, was there a period was it a quick flip? Like, I don't want to be a doctor. Now what am I going to do? Or was it, I don't want to be a doctor because I want to be a venture capitalist or something else?
Not at all that. For me, it's cultural as well. I grew up in a South Asian household where, you know, my parents weren't so much like that, but the community is, you know, you're going to be a doctor, an engineer, or a lawyer. It's a common stereotype, but was accurate. So,
so that's what you wanted to do.
That's what I wanted to do. My mind changed early on and took some time to convince myself to pivot and the uncertainty, and decided I wanted to go into tech. So I went and worked at a venture-backed startup that had raised a series, I think C. They were raising a series D round of funding, doing very well. I might have gone and worked for them, but that just became my new focus. It's kind of an entryway into this startup ecosystem, make some connections, you know, meet founders, investors, and so on. That would have been the route that I was taken. And where I ended up, I always am very transparent about the fact that I fell into venture capital, right? It was like joining a startup. Lakesh, who started Moneta, was my mentor since I interned at his last company, and provided so much guidance. He's the reason I went to Berkeley. He knew that I was not going to stay pre-med. I was going to be at, you know, a Duke or somewhere else deep in medicine. And he's like, it's not going to happen. So go to a school that has an engineering program. And thankfully, at that time, he was launching Moneta. And I had an opportunity to kind of do that, where I'm joining a startup. I'm not taking all the risk, but there's a lot of upside. And I'm kind of hitching my wagon to a mentor who has done this successfully. So one piece of advice I like to give, you know, college students and even high school students is, we always talk about network, network, network. That doesn't just mean show up to conferences, events, and try to go talk to the keynote speaker because you want to be in the Rolodex, but rather find people that have been successful and try to foster natural connections with them. And the unique thing about Sacramento is, I think we're a smaller community. Access to talk to someone that knows the space is easier, right? I get hit up by UC Davis, Sac State students all the time, just asking for advice, and it's not an issue for me to have a 15-minute phone call with them. And that type of relationship building over, you know, a 2 to 4 year period can have great returns for an individual, right? Where you don't have to go jump in a startup, but you build a relationship with successful people and hopefully be a part of whatever they do. In my mind, it takes some of the risk away from jumping in and starting your own business without experience while still retaining the ability to get, you know, whatever, the tech fame or the fortune that might come with a successful business.
What about the people? And I think there's a lot of the population that hasn't discovered, they haven't grown up yet, right? Yeah. So you wonder, I don't know if anybody's ever asked you, when did you become a man? Did anybody ever ask you that?
Yeah, I asked myself that.
Yeah.
And way later than I should have. Yeah. definitely, you know, in academics, very like pigeonholed into that versus taking charge of your own life and, you know, landing your first job and doing what you need to do independently to sustain yourself. So it took a while to get there. And honestly, it wasn't until way after graduation that I got in that mindset. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I, looking back, was finding myself for a long time. And I think that's very common, right? We can't expect you to know what you want to do for 30 years at the age of 18. A 5-year plan is probably all I can ever hope for.
Right.
And so for those that are still, you know, finding their way, I think that's totally fine. And this previous advice, I think, applies to even that, right? When you meet with young founders, right, you don't like it to be transactional where they want something from you at that moment. And that's kind of a turnoff, right? So regardless of where they are in their lives or what they want to do, if they have an interest in retail, if they have an interest in tech, being able to just talk to people and develop those relationships, regardless of where they are in their journey, I think is just a good long-term investment.
Yeah, I like the way you use the term investment, because I think a lot of young people don't really think about the compounding effect of these relationships, right? And showing up and being great, right? And really putting yourself out there in a way that is exceptional, whether it be an early job, a co-work, you know, an event with a, you know, a bunch of founders and some investors, even if you're just showing up to, I don't know, to learn a little bit. If you can make an impact on somebody, that's an investment, and an investment that can pay. And so I think getting used to making those investments is something that I think a lot of us don't think we ought to do, or maybe we're afraid to do it because I don't want to put myself out there. You know, we don't know what our dream is. I mean, I wanted to be a pro football player. You're going to be a doctor. It's like, well, I'm not sure what I want to be when I grow up. I feel like I'm almost in the wrong party if I show up at a startup event.
Yeah. And you know, back to my whole point about living in a bubble, we have this Berkeley mindset of, you know, these are the people that only do this, right? But that's not representative of the population. So what you're talking about is people that have dreams that are constantly evolving and iterating. I interned at a tech company when I was going to Berkeley to be pre-med because I enjoyed the founder. That paid dividends because 5 years later, I got an offer back from the founder to come join him. And it definitely was an investment that was completely tangential to what I wanted to do at the time. Good experience, didn't pay off right away, and now I'm in a career that I love. And for folks, you know, especially locally, I get to mentor a lot of students from Sac State, the Carlson Center and otherwise, that reach out. And, you know, from their standpoint, they're figuring out what they want to do. They're, you know, earning their associate's or their bachelor's degree, and a lot of times don't have access to the same networks, right?
Yeah.
For them, like, how do you manufacture those that success or that network around you? It can be done, right? And for me, I spend a lot of time reading about these things. There's some very easy steps on how to manufacture both authenticity and your network. It's almost like a guideline for them to be able to step 4 steps ahead and get to that level of a network that students at Berkeley or Stanford might have just by virtue of being there. If they can do that and start building those relationships, it makes a huge difference for them in, you know, 2, 3, 4 years.
So let's talk about like deciding where you want to go in your life. You're this young person, you're in college potentially, and I think a lot of us, we knew we wanted to do something great in our lives, right? What do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know, football player, whatever. It's like, I want to do something great. And entrepreneurship, owning your own business, really puts you at least in a position to do something very, very special versus getting an ordinary job and working, you know, working for the state, or, you know, no slight on our people that keep the roads safe. But, you know, when you have your own business, when you are the entrepreneur or part of a founding team, you really are in a position to control your own destiny and do something very, very special. But what if you don't know what that is yet?
Yeah.
Right? How do these discoveries happen?
Yeah. So my earlier point about thinking about the first few years of your first job almost like an apprenticeship. Regardless of what job function you play, you might be in operations or finance or sales or marketing or engineering, but you don't know what you want to do in life. You might even just be a, you know, generalist. I'm a jack of all trades. I'll do what needs to be done, join an early startup, and whatever the CEO tells me, I'm there to do it. That's such a great way to learn what you want to do, because, like, you know, most startups, you wear 15 different hats if you're one of the first 50 employees. So for folks that really want to become an entrepreneur, instead of just, you know, throwing a dart at a dartboard and hoping it sticks, is trying to treat that as an investment into your entrepreneurial education, right? Where, mm-hmm. I found someone that knows what he's doing, and I want to build along with it, figure out what I like, and maybe do something of my own afterwards.
Yeah,
I feel like that's a good way to look at it. But the other side is what I was talking about, idealizing entrepreneurship. There's a sliding scale. Like you mentioned a state job, and you know, I'm jealous of my friend's future state pension after I learned about the economics. But there's a state job. There's, you know, blue chip companies, you know, work at Intel in Folsom. My dad was there for a long time, stable, well-paying, everything else. But then the entire gamut like spreads all the way to like these early, early startups with ideas in a garage to, you know, well-funded companies that are still paying well, give you an upside and everything else. So people think of it as almost a binary thing, but it's really not, right? There's many stages that you can enter, whether it's in tech or other small businesses that allow you to have that startup experience, not on your own dime, learn a lot and figure out what you like.
Yeah. No, I like that. I mean, people ask me sometimes, Mark, I know I want to do something great, but I don't have a vision. I don't have the big dream. You know, I talk on the show a lot. My dream is about igniting an entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love, but people don't have that yet, right? Because it just hasn't, you know, manifested itself for them yet. And one of the things that I suggest that they do is if you don't have your dream yet, go be around somebody who's got that dream because it can be infectious. And the other thing I would add to that to kind of piggyback off something you said is like when you're choosing which startup to go get involved with, that person with the dream, attach yourself to what you view is going to be a championship team, because there's I've played on a number of championship teams in sports. I've built a couple of what I think are championship type companies. And if you are in the early stage company, or excuse me, employees of a real championship team, there's nothing more rewarding than being a part of that team. You don't have to be the CEO to have it be a really, really cool experience. And I think if you're a little choosy on which startup you get involved with, go for the one that you really believe in. Almost like I would say put your venture capital hat on a little bit. Pretend you're a venture capitalist. Which one of these things is going to go to the roof, and go put yourself on that team, and then give everything you have to that effort. And if you choose that to be a construction company, give everything you have to that construction company. If it's a tech company, give everything you have and help that team get to the championship. And hey, good things happen for you when you commit like that.
Totally. And I mean, you said infectious, and it just becomes infectious to you both while you're working there, but also after the fact, when many people are evaluating their first job offer, or like you said, working at a startup or a construction company for that matter. The usual metrics are, hey, what's my compensation? What are my benefits? Which is all fine, right? That's necessary. But the ancillary benefits that you don't think about is who you associate with. And the founder that you work with, your manager, people that have to have your back and you're going to have theirs. That's a lifelong relationship you build. And they're going to be the ones referring you to your next job. And they're going to be the ones to really look out for you. But the other side of it, when you put your investor hat on, is, yeah, the team is what matters. And when you think about working specifically in tech at a venture-backed startup, it's not just that company, the investors around that company, those investors, other companies that they've invested in, just by virtue of working there. You have access to this wide network of places that's going to be your next job or your next co-founder or something like that, right? That people don't think about when they evaluate it. They might jump for the highest base salary instead of thinking about what does my life look like 5 years out? And what can I do now to ensure that I have that network in the future? And that's what I encourage a lot of my friends. Like, I help them evaluate their comp packages and everything else. I was like, hey, these two are equal on face value. This one pays $10,000 more a year. Look at who's invested in this company and who you want to surround yourself with. And that intangible benefit for, you know, a recent college grad's first job is often overlooked, but I think incredibly important.
I agree. Be part of that championship team. And I think you mentioned that the comp package, and we'll just stay on the sort of the VC backed or the angel backed companies. In many cases, once they're VC backed, they're putting together stock option pools as part of the comp package. Talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, you have an investor hat that you put on. If I'm an employee or I want to be a part of one of these rocket ships, when can I expect to get a stock option package? Do I need to be in at the ground floor? How does that work as an employee?
So what we encourage our companies to do is have everyone have some sort of stock in the company. It creates an ownership mentality that regardless of the dollar amount, they feel invested in and a part owner of the business. So we want to ensure everyone is compensated with equity at some sort, at every stage of funding. I think typically when you get past the Series B, C, D stages, it becomes a little different, more like a large public company with, you know, restricted options and things. But at the early stages, you should be very well rewarded. So we talked about angel investment. Typically, when you have an angel investor, you don't really have capital to pay anywhere close to market salaries, right? Like, no matter who you're hiring, you're going to take a 60, 70% pay cut from whatever you were doing before. And if that works, great. And you make up the rest of it with options. The way I like to frame it is that opportunity cost for you needs to have some ROI. So we'll just take an example that you would have gotten a junior software engineering position at Intel, maybe making, you know, $70,000-$80,000 a year. And you're going to go work for two people that got angel investment and you're going to be their founding software engineer. They can pay you maybe, you know, $30,000, $40,000 until they get funded for a year. How do you make up that $40,000 delta? The options that they give you based on the risk profile need to be worth maybe four or five times that in a five-year period, in order for it to be worth giving up a guaranteed salary of that amount, right? So when I create comp packages a lot of times for both friends and companies to say that, hey, what's your risk tolerance and what does this need to be worth to you in 5 years to make up for the fact that you're losing a guaranteed $40,000 or $50,000 a year in base salary? So just thinking about it that way means that you could have outsized returns and more risk. And they should be expecting those equity packages early on. And it gets smaller as the company gets better funded, right? Because the risk that you take on is lower. So at an angel level, right, you might have a few percentage points as an early employee, which is a lot when the company is worth a ton of money. And after the Series A, that'll drop to, you know, a couple tenths of a percent point, right? It's still worth a lot of money. But at that point, they have enough money to pay you market salary. So the earlier you join at the ground floor, the higher chance you have of success, and you're giving up a few years of earning potential. So that's how I typically look at it.
I like how you kind of use the risk tolerance, you know, way of making a decision, because I think there, and a lot of that comes from who influenced you in your formative years, right? So if you grew up in a house where your mom and dad were both employees or school teachers, maybe work for the government potentially, I think Sacramento's full of those people, right? We're now having an influx from the Bay Area of tech workers and people who have been exposed to venture-backed success stories. But in Sacramento, we're kind of a government town. Yeah. You feel like your friends from around here have a little more, I'll call it employee mentality or lower risk tolerance. Give me the guarantee. Give me the sure thing. Let me play for the pension.
Yeah, it varies. One of my best friends works for Caltrans. He's making good money. He's very happy. And he's going to put in his time and have a guaranteed pension, right? Live a good life. And works out great. I mean, state pensions are notoriously great packages. That's the mindset that, you know, he loves. And it takes a certain type of personality to enjoy that the work is not what drives them. It's what it enables them to do outside of work. And I really respect that mindset. But in Sacramento, I'm seeing a huge shift in the other direction. Might be partly because, you know, we're getting an influx of folks that are coming here, young families, individuals that are coming from the Bay and elsewhere that have that mindset. But it's also kind of how investors here are changing that mindset. We're seeing more homegrown companies. We're seeing companies move operations here, and they have that mindset of instilling an ownership mentality in their employees, right? And so I think it's not just economically beneficial for people to think that way, but it's becoming a cultural shift in Sacramento. But you're totally right, right? With the Intels of the world, VSPs, the government jobs, that's definitely been the mentality of people that grew up here and went through that. For me personally, right, my dad worked at Intel for 21 years. He was a director there. Great, stable, well-paying job. And, you know, he was a first generation coming here from India. So, I mean, for him, it's amazing. So grew up seeing that, right? And that was my view of technology. Nowadays, that's completely shifted, where it really is, even at the early stages, as a software engineer, you're your own entrepreneur at someone else's company, is how I view it. My personal story in terms of risk tolerance is, like I was saying, I was going to go work at a venture-backed company, have some equity, and make good money, right? And you've seen how much money goes into these companies.
You bet.
They can afford to pay Google-level salaries and give you stock options. It's a little nuts sometimes, but that was a pretty high opportunity cost. And for me to join Moneta right out of college was, you know, giving up 60, 70% of possible pay at that time. For me, it was a no-brainer, right? Like, knowing Lokesh and just believing in his success was one piece of it. But, you know, he is one of the biggest inspirations for me and how I coach our founders, that I was not worthy of the amount of profit sharing and carried interest that I received at that time, right? His view was, if you are successful, you'll have earned way more than that, right? For a recent college grad to be coming in and owning a partnership interest in a fund is unique, right? And it's an opportunity that's doesn't come by that often, but I gave up a lot to come and do that, right? And that risk tolerance has paid off because I've seen what Lokesh has done in the past. I've seen what he's done with his employees and everything else, right? He incentivizes everyone that works for him to be an owner in the company and share in his success, and we'll all share in the failures, right? So that type of incentivizing and coaching has served me really well.
Yeah. I think everybody who knows Lokesh has this unique appreciation for his humility. Obviously, he's had a lot of success, and we're talking about Lokesh Sakharia. He's the founder of Moneta, so he's brought in yourself and others to really launch this very important venture capital company in Sacramento. And for those that maybe don't know what he was talking about, what Sabia was talking about for in terms of carry, can you explain how that works?
Sure.
Unless your investment works, you guys don't really have you don't make any money.
Yeah, sometimes the lingo gets completely lost when you're talking about it all the time. But pretty much how it works is we have investors that invest in us, and we invest in companies. When those companies exit, our equity is worth something. As we get the returns as the companies exit, we give that back to our investors. Mm-hmm. They're whole. After they're whole, we share in the profits. That's what carried interest, carry, is referred to, is the profit above and beyond returning investor capital. And usually the partners at a fund get to share in that, and that's where they make their money, right? If we're successful, our investors are very successful, but we're making money on that, right?
Yeah.
We're all financially aligned. And what I was going to earlier about, you know, if you're a young person in venture, it's actually common misconception that VC is this glorious, high-paying profession. It's like a startup, right? When we're raising a small fund, you're not making in finance money, right? You're really incentivized to go and make money for your investors, and then you have the real shot at the upside. And so we started a $25 million fund here, and all of us had the vision of, we're going to make our investors successful, but we're not getting rich off the salaries and overhead that were paid, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of typically how VC works overall. But most people don't realize it's the lowest paid of the finance world, which was interesting to me. Didn't realize that until I was 2 years into my career. But private equity, hedge funds, and the like. You hear about these, you know, recent college grads making $300,000-$400,000 a year. Blows my mind. And venture is very much the long tail game.
Yeah, well, so breaking into venture capital. So you, who's a good fit to break into venture capital right out of college? That sounds like an exception to break in like that.
It is. And I mean, I'll be fully transparent and candid about why it's difficult. Part of it is who you know, for sure, right? And there's just no way around that. There's ways to circumvent that, like I was mentioning with networking with folks, and I'll get to that in a minute. But if you want to break into a tier one firm, it's hard because you're competing with people that have years of job experience, MBA candidates and others, right? That are just all stars in their own right. It's difficult to compete
against them. A tier one venture capital firm, say in the Bay Area.
Exactly. Right. Like you hear about like Sequoias and the others, mm-hmm. right? And it's happened for sure. And there's exceptional young people out of college that will land those jobs. But the way VCs work is we raise a fund every, you know, 3 to 5 years, 2 to 4 years. And we don't really hire until we raise a new fund, right? We start a fund, we have fixed expenses, and that determines our hiring process. So the supply of jobs in venture is really low. And when we do hire, it's probably going to be someone that we've worked with before or that's referred by the extended network. It's kind of just the nature of how it works. But what happened with Moneta, at least when we were starting it, is I was part of that kind of founding team as an analyst, right? So the future is unsure. We don't have the brand name recognition yet, but I'm confident in the team, right? So for people that are looking to break into venture, it's these early funds that are getting off the ground that are going to look for talented, hardworking individuals that have a certain competency threshold. It's not a very high threshold at the early stage, right? You got to be a master at Excel. You have to understand the tech lingo and track the trends. But you can hitch your wagon to someone else's success at the very early stage of a fund, and that gives you a possibility for growth. But people looking to break into venture, the most common ways is go work at a venture-backed company, go work in a different field, and then eventually transition.
Different field, would that be like something in finance? You go to work for Morgan Stanley or, you know, major brokerage or something?
That's a very common way to get into venture or private equity is typically the finance, you know, undergraduate business, economics. You're going to go work as a consultant or a, you know, investment banker, maybe do your MBA and come into venture. That's been kind of a tried and true approach. Takes a lot of time, takes a lot of money, works for some. And depending on the venture firm you work for, they might not like that profile of individual, right? Like I don't fit that profile when I came in, right? They want, you know, go-getters, personable people, not necessarily people that just know spreadsheets, but, you know, many people like yourself who are like, you know, we can interact with people. We have that persona, charisma, as well as the competency to put together financial models and things like that. So advice to people that want to break into venture, right, is going back to it, networking with, you know, angel investors. They might be starting a fund in the future. Like, it's a great example with the Growth Factory, right? It's like transitioning from my own angel investing into a fund and maybe hiring an analyst, is networking with those types of people, tracking the trends. There's VC job lists that are out there that pretty much tell you this guy's starting a new fund in LA and he's hiring an analyst, right? If you track these things, you get in under the wire. It's a great way to just like break into venture. And even if you don't break in right away, you might in the future if they know you. And a great example is the guy I just hired, right, a year ago. I don't know if you've met Eli, but Eli Wolfson is an associate with us now. And he was not connected to Moneta. It was a third degree referral to us. But an absolute rock star. He interned for me after his freshman year at a small private school in the East Coast, did not come from the tech Bay Area background, kept in touch with me after the internship. I let him know, hey, we're not hiring for another 5 years. He came back for another internship. He's like, hey, I love you guys. I love working with you guys. And we just happened to be able to raise a fund and said, we're not going to run a process. We're going to hire you, right? He put in the time and the effort to meet with us, maintain relationships, and landed the job without having to do anything after.
So be an intern. That sounds like a great way to break in. You're in college. Don't drop out. Stay in school, my children. But go become an intern. It's a way to sort of test the waters, if you will. And I mean, one of the learnings that I have from that story is... Eli is his name, right?
Yeah.
He obviously kicked some serious butt, or you wouldn't have recruited him back in. So that's kind of the interesting thing. It's okay to be great. Hey, it's just an internship. What's the big deal? Go be great, and you never know. It might be your way of breaking into a field that's very difficult to break into.
He was unique in that he did amazing work in his internships, obviously, and you know, excelled, and the team loved him, which the culture fit is huge in a small team. Outside of that, he would email me articles that were relevant to me. He would send me interesting Excel models and stuff he's working on that's applicable to the fund while he was in school when he had nothing to gain from it, right? That type of mindset is so genuine and really helped him land the job. But yeah, be excellent. Internships are great because venture is not for everyone. I'm 7 years into the career and it's been the only job I've had. And it's a different mentality that you got to sign up for a long time. So interning at a venture fund is great. I think the last 3 years I've run our internship program, everyone's been local. So from Davis to Folsom and all around Sacramento, I think we really try to do that and make sure we engage UC Davis students, Sac State students, and people that are from this area. So, I mean, we love that. And we think it's a great way for them to get their feet wet in the industry.
Who should not do it? You said it's not for everybody. If someone listening going, hey, I'm thinking about it, yeah. Well, don't come knocking if.
Yeah. So it is finance at that stage. At the analyst and associate level, it's a lot of finance and research. So if you're passionate about the industry, learning, researching, it's great, right? And Eli is really passionate about it, right? That's putting in your work in your first few years of work. That might lead to a future career as a partner or a principal at the fund, but you have to be either passionate about that or at least not hate it. So that's piece one. The second piece is if you want to build a career in venture, just like anything else, it's a very long tail game. I was mentioning, you know, the carry and how VCs make money. If you're there for a few years and you're out, the whole purpose of going into venture is to share in the success of how your companies do. And we're just now seeing, you know, the carry from fund one going to come in this year from 7 years ago when we started the fund, right? Because the companies take a while to grow and exit. So you have to have that patience and commitment to say, I'm going to sign up for this job knowing that I need to stick it out for 6 to 10 years to really see the fruits of my labor. And it's a different type of mindset. It's a bit more slower moving as a career, fast paced day to day. But if you're okay with that, it's a great place to be.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to Locatia a little bit because one of the things Rick and I, my partner over here, Rick and I were talking about when an entrepreneur investor, an investorpreneur, if you will, invest into your early stage company, that can be an advantage as compared to simply a finance person who owns a venture capital company investing. How much does Lokesh's previous entrepreneurial success sort of play? I know it plays into the success of Moneta, but how much does it play into the success in terms of helping the founders that you guys invest into?
Yeah, that's the entire thesis upon which Moneta was started. And me not having spent as much time working with him in the past was originally skeptical of this idea of operating companies and investing in them at the same time. But the idea was we're not going to see the top 1% of deal flow for Moneta, right? We don't have the name recognition yet to get access to those companies. They're going to get funded by the top Silicon Valley company firms, venture firms. So what do? We're going to get good companies. We're going to find great founders, but how do we make them excellent? And so Lokesh's thesis was, we can't just assume that's going to be them on their own. So half our job is finding and investing in the right companies, but you know, more than half, honestly, is operating with those companies. So we do all of it. So we help them spin up their sales teams, right? At the Series A and seed stage, you're kind of, you might have one salesperson. The CEO is the guy usually selling. We've done this for a few companies where we've actually created the sales team internally to go sell their products, right? And that's an experience that, you know, founders have to go through, and we can accelerate that. Most VCs are on the board of directors of the companies that they're invested in. They have, you know, quarterly board meetings. They provide advice, guidance, strategy for the next quarter. Our focus is we're doing weekly or biweekly calls with most of our founders, and not just the CEOs, but the CTOs, the marketing guys, the sales reps, to kind of just help them stay on track or answer their questions that they might have so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. So I think it makes a massive difference to our portfolio. And I know Lokesh likes sharing the story, but for one of our companies that was doing incredibly well out of our first fund, we were the only investors in the company, and we owned a good amount of the company. But Vaibhav, who's the other managing partner, spent a significant amount of time with them, almost as like a co-C-suite executive, day in and day out, helping them grow. And they grew to profitability and, you know, 25 plus million in revenue, doing really excellent. At that time, the founder called Vaibhav and said, hey, I want to give you guys another percent. And so Lokesh and Vaibhav are like, you want us to buy a percent from you? You want us to invest some more? And his view was, no. I mean, when I took on investors, I thought I was getting money. But what you guys have given me, I just want to give you 1% of what I own.
He gave you 1% of his company?
He just gave us 1%, right? And a company that's doing $25 million in revenue is worth some serious dough, right? So for us,
whoa,
that just was like a testament, you know, 4 years into the fact that, hey, this operating thing, entrepreneurs themselves value this so much more than the brand name or the money of any venture fund.
Wow, I'm a little pissed off at myself right now, I have to admit. Rick and I do investments into these founders, and sometimes, you know, usually a little earlier stage than you guys, but and I'll have people sit across from me on the couch and might even have tears in their eyes because they're you know, they're thinking about whether they're going to make it or not. They're teetering, right?
Sure.
So many of these early stage companies face near-death experiences over and over again in that first couple years, and it can be really stressful, and somehow we hold their hand and, you know, or maybe get them connected here and there, but nobody has ever given me a percent of their company after the fact. So we have to step up our game a little bit here. This is really inspiring. Now you've motivated me.
Setting the new bar.
Yes. Be so good they give you part of their company. Come on, man.
No, but it's helped so much. And I think specifically in Sacramento, right? We have some amazing founders here, hustlers that do incredible work. But the Bay Area DNA of being around it is just not here yet, right? And it's coming slowly. So until then, what can we do to kind of accelerate that growth or fake it till we make it from a founder standpoint is just get involved, help them operate, help them sell, help them hire. Just add so much more value than just throwing more money at the problem.
Wow. I kind of used the comment a few minutes ago. It's okay to be great, right? Even if it's your first job, it could even be Burger King. Be great. Well, if you're a venture capitalist, just be so damn good that you help these people succeed. Because I agree, Sacramento is sort of considered a second tier sort of place to look for their venture capital money, right? They're looking for the Sequoias and so on. So I love that. Well, let's kind of wrap a little bit. Any closing thoughts? And then I want to get your take. You mentioned Sacramento and kind of touched on it's changing or it's beginning to change. And I would submit that we're at the beginning of something special, but I want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, so I grew up in Folsom around Intel, and that was tech for me, and that's what I heard about it. Nothing more, right? And so this is 20 years ago, and then I went to college at Berkeley, where I was exposed to a lot of it, and it was a bit of a culture shock and so different than what I'm used to. Came back in 2014 to work at Moneta, and there was just the beginnings of that change happening. We have some organizations working on economic development, on investment, and we're seeing some homegrown startups that started then. And your idea of this entrepreneurial evolution, a revolution, I think has just kind of taken the city by storm, a slow storm, but a storm nonetheless.
A little too slow for my liking, but it's we're in the process.
No, you guys are doing amazing work, but we're seeing this, like, it's infectious enthusiasm, but that alone is not enough to ignite this economy. So what we're seeing is an influx of capital, an influx of talent, homegrown companies of people here that want to start businesses here, but also people from the Bay Area that are moving here. This whole remote work and everything else is inspiring that, and they know they can be in a lower cost of living region, not really that low cost anymore.
It's a little higher, but it's still low compared to Silicon Valley. So,
but they're able to do that now, and all these things coming together has, I think, created a new type of business economy here with startups, a lot more collaboration. You know, city, county level folks are getting involved in enabling startups, right? You know, Sacramento and California hasn't always been the most business friendly place to start a company. We're seeing that change now, right? And I think that's working. We're seeing new funds being spun up. We're seeing other investors take note of Sacramento. And one thought that, you know, I've asked every big name VC that I've had the fortune of being on a panel with or asking questions to, hey, I'm from Sacramento. We're investing in Sacramento. What does it take for you guys to look at us? And they're just like, we haven't considered it because you guys have not had a $1 billion exit yet. And that was, I've heard that three or four times independently, right? And while I don't subscribe to that mentality, I think you can be very successful without being a unicorn, to attract that kind of outside investment, we're like, oh, dang, this is a tech hub. Yeah. I think we need a couple of those big hitters to just kind of put us on the map. And I think we're on the way to make that happen.
There's a couple common origin the materials. He's been on the show a few times, John Bissell, and there's a few others that that look like they could get there. So yeah, we get a couple real success stories, and we'll have proof
for sure.
Yeah. Well, Sabia, appreciate you joining me on the show today. Appreciate our relationship with you and Moneta, and I appreciate everything you do for this hometown that I love.
No, thank you, and I know I'm trying to follow in your footsteps. Thanks,
thank you very much. Thanks. Great show today. Enjoyed speaking with Sabia Das with Moneta Ventures. And you think about what Moneta and team are doing, Sabia and Lokesh and Vaibhav, and the people there that are investing into Sacramento's entrepreneurial future, investing into the founders, and what that does for those companies. It gives them that fuel that they need to sort of scale their companies. And what it does for our region, what it does for a local economy is a business becomes successful, it begins to hire people, it begins to create all kinds of opportunities. So I really tip my cap to Moneta, Sabia and team, and the other folks out there that are investing into our regional founders, because really, you know, the entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They're taking all this risk, making all these sacrifices to figure out a way to change the world. And when they do, it's great for the entire world. So I appreciate it when I see people backing them, when people are figuring out a way to rally around them. And I think it's something that all of us kind of need to think about doing. So if you're interested out there in getting involved in early stage investments, angel investments, I can introduce you to Moneta. I can introduce you to the people in my network, the other angel investor community, and really hopefully get you a little bit more inspired if you're thinking about it, or more a little bit more educated about how this whole process works. Because I can tell you, my friends, that when we invest into these early stage founders, it's like living vicariously through one of the hardest, most ambitious, one of the hardest trying, most ambitious people in the world. And when they're right here in our backyard, it is doubly fulfilling. And so to all you out there, all your investors, all you founders, anybody out there working to help change the world, you know, here at Haney Biz, we are never above you, never below you, always by your side. This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.